Kick-Ass Best, sharing tips to help empower you to take control of your career. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Anne, as always, and today we are super lucky to have Dr. Salvador with us. I was very lucky to work with Salvador at a clinic before he graduated. So he was a final year vet student when I met him, and now he's gone on to graduate, and you're about 6 months out of school. And we're going to chat about that transition period from student to new grad. So, you know, do you want to tell us about yourself and a little bit about your history, and we'll go from there?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Anne. Yeah, so my name's Salvador. I am from originally from Stockholm, so I'm from Sweden, and I moved to Australia to study at the University of Sydney. So I was there for 6 years, and I graduated as a Doctor of Veterinary Medicine about 6 months ago. During university, I worked as a sort of animal assistant, but I also did later on, I started working as a nurse as well. So that's where I met Anne. And yeah, so we're here today to talk about new grad things.
I am going to start off by, there was one thing I was thinking about yesterday when I was thinking about chatting with you. And I'm going to start you off on an uncomfortable foot. So don't worry, we can cut it out if you don't want to chat about this. When we were working together, we had a cat come in that ended up having a congenital pericardial diaphragmatic hernia. And this cat was very, very, very sick. And the owners, you know, unfortunately didn't have the finances to pursue things appropriately. They didn't even have money to do an x-ray. But we knew that the cat was very sick. It was like dehydrated, skin and bones, you know. And you and I said, let's give this a go. So we actually got the owner to surrender the cat over, because the other option was euthanasia for the kitty. So we said, let's give this surgery a go. It's a great learning experience for you as a new grad. You were like 2 months before graduation at that point. Yeah. And so we both clocked off, and in our own time, we stayed and did surgery on this kitty. And I kind of threw it in your lap and said, you're in charge. You're the doctor now. And you're going to run the show. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be scrubbed in. We're going to do everything together, but you're going to run the show. And that was a little bit stressful for you. And you had a bit of a lightheaded event during that. And I think that's important to talk about, because I think a lot of people end up getting that experience when they're out in practice. And it's nothing, and then people have that feeling, they feel like, I'm not good enough, or there's something wrong with me, but that's a very normal feeling to have, and I definitely had that when I was starting off. So I know it's a little bit crazy to jump right into that, but do you want to talk about that and how you were feeling, and kind of, has that happened again, or how did that help you grow, or was that terrible that I did that to you? Because that was a lot to throw in your lap as your like first case, like an incredibly sick cat with a very severe condition that needed a very complex surgery.
Yeah, I do very much remember that time. It was a really, I think, really good experience, to be honest, because it was probably the first time that I really felt like this was for real, and it was my responsibility. Even though, I mean, you were standing next to me, you were ready to give me a hand, but as I was making that first incision and approaching the abdomen, I started feeling all of this pressure that I'd never experienced before in vet school, like doing space and castrations. And I felt a bit lightheaded, and I actually had to take a break and sit down and sort of collect myself. It was totally fine and took over. But I think that experience really made me understand, like, you know, you're not a student anymore. Like, this is actually on me now. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever I'm doing surgery, whenever I'm doing a procedure, or I'm anesthetizing, or I'm giving an animal any type of drug, that responsibility is always on me. So I've had since then, I've had things happen in surgery, nothing serious, but I've had sort of unexpected things happen. Yeah. And I think having that experience previously has helped me maintain my calm a little bit.
Good. I feel a little bit guilty.
No, it's fine. It was good. I mean, no harm done, in my opinion. So, you have that feeling sometimes when you're in surgery, when something unexpected happens, where you get this rush of adrenaline and you get very, you feel your heartbeat starts going really quickly. For example, I think, I had a half sort of dropped pedicle, cervical one when I did a spay, and that was just a bit of blood, and you just get the heart rate coming. But yeah, that was a good experience for sure. Yeah.
It didn't scar you for life.
No.
It's one of those things where in school, you know, previous to when I graduated, they used to have a situation with the research animals where they would actually induce a cardiac arrest in the animals, and then the teams in school would be responsible for bringing them back. And you either would or you wouldn't, you know? And at the end of the day, those animals were anesthetized, so it wasn't like they were feeling it. I'm sure there was some level of discomfort, but they were research animals and they were euthanized under anesthetic. However, by the time our class came through, that wasn't a thing anymore. So, you know, when we were doing splenectomies, when we were doing a lot of the surgeries, they were on cadavers. So I think it's great that we're progressing in terms of ethics and appropriately treating animals and, you know, being very aware of how we use our research animals and that sort of thing. But at the same time, it does take away that real life adrenaline, that real life pressure that you do feel and you will feel as a vet. So it's, if you can get as much experience hands-on prior to graduation, that's good. So doing rotations in humane societies, and at some point shit's gonna hit the fan. At some point you're gonna have surgery and it's gonna go wrong, or you're gonna drop a pedicle, and having that experience and knowing what to do and being able to be like, okay, this is fine, this is how I progress, is important. But yeah, it's, you know, I don't think you'll ever get over having some of those experiences of the hot flashes and the
support. Yeah.
I had a dog recently where it just had some fat coming out from the incision. And when I went in, I expected to just, like, you know, open it up, flush out the abdomen, debride a little bit, close it up. And it was just way more involved than I expected. And I ended up having to debride, like, a centimeter or two of muscle. And, you know, the dog was stable, everything was fine, but even so, I got that elevated heart rate and start to sweat a little bit because it just wasn't what I was emotionally prepared for when I went into surgery. So even though everything was fine, as soon as you hit something unexpected, you're going to hit that feeling. So,
yeah,
knowing that that's normal and knowing that that's something that everybody experiences, even when you have, God, 7 years experience now, it is quite normal to feel that way. And especially when you're first starting, like, I went through periods where I had to train my body not to faint every time I saw blood, because I used to have severe issues with that as I was shadowing when I first started. So it's normal to have those experiences.
Yeah, good. I mean, yeah, it's just something that that transition as being a student to being an actual vet, it's just very different.
What did you expect it to be like, and what has been like, you know, what are the main things that have been different than you expected?
So even though, like, I've worked as a nurse for the last, like, 4 or 5 years almost, or been an animal attendant or assistant, so I've been in hospitals and I'm quite familiar with how they run and all of that, even though I had that, there was still that responsibility that is a big thing, that when you work as a nurse, you just don't have the same amount of responsibility. I suppose there's this thing called decision fatigue, which I completely understand now that I'm actually a vet. Like, we have to make so many decisions so quickly sometimes, and sometimes you're in a console and you go outside to maybe get some drugs, and then you're managing an in-hospital patient at the same time, and then a nurse comes up to you and asks you about a case that you saw 3 days ago that's now like vomiting and having diarrhea, and they're asking you about what do you think they should do. So you're like, you also have to juggle like so many things at the same time.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think you just have to experience it to really like get better at handling those situations as well.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a really hard job, and I think it is. I think it's just, you bring up a good point. I think that more nurses have a huge leg up. They have a huge leg up in having that experience, having worked in clinics, dealing with conversations with the public, having a little bit of pattern recognition, you know, those types of things. But you're probably actually at a slight disadvantage when it comes to that responsibility level, because you've gotten comfortable being in that setting, not having that responsibility on your shoulders. So it's probably more of a shock to people that have worked as nurses than it is to people that haven't worked as nurses, which is interesting. Yeah. So, you know, the pros and cons of having that experience, because it's not, you're not the first nurse to that I've talked to that has felt that way. And, you know, decision fatigue, that's a really good point. You know, we're often juggling about 10 things in our head at once, and you can only put so much effort. So it's important to recognize that if you are having that, you have to say to that nurse that's coming up to you about the phone call, you know what I need you to do is write a note in the file about what the concern is, and I can't think about that right now, and I will call them back. And I've never actually recognized it before, but that's actually a phrase that I say a lot of times to my nurses when they come and ask me something about a patient. If I have a really critical patient and I'm dealing with, you know, three things that are like that, and they come and ask me something about a stable patient, I'll just say to them, I can't think about that right now. I say it all the time. I say, you know, push that treatment for an hour from now. I'll address it then, put a note on my list, but I can't think about it right now. And being able to recognize I can only think about so many things at once, and you can push that. That's okay. That's okay for you to say, to not be able to juggle all those things, especially as a new grad, because it is all of your decisions are harder because you're having to think more about it. You know, something that's like a little question like, oh, well, the dose for amoxiclav says 200 milligrams, but the pill comes in 250. Should I give 3/4 or a whole tablet? You as a new grad would be like, oh my God. And I'm like, just give a whole tablet. So the decisions are going to be harder for you not having as much experience. So don't be afraid to say, you know what, put a pin in that, write it down on my list. Make sure you have a setup where there's a list of things that where your nurses and your team know that you can put them there and you'll address them when you have time. So that things aren't missed. But it's a really, really good point that you bring up. I'm glad you bring that up.
Yeah. So no, that's been one thing. Another thing that I've thought a lot about is how, you know, going through university, especially final year, going through the placements, at university teaching hospitals and going into clinics, we get taught, I think, we get taught gold standard best practice from specialists, usually at university. And we get taught to think in a certain way and also to communicate and write our medical records a certain way. When transitioning into practice, I learned that I had to, and I think everyone will find their way of how to write their own journals, but I found that the way I've been trained to write them doesn't necessarily fit always in general, at least in a general practice setting, where sometimes you have a very limited time, and you just have to maybe note down the most important thing at that time, and then come back at a later time and properly type it up. This is for something I wasn't really prepared for either.
No, it's a really good point. In school, they expect you to write essays. And I remember, you know, everything had to be through. And I think one of the biggest challenges that new grads have is figuring out how much is real world, and how much is that their boss or the owners of the clinic or the people that work there having become complacent or, you know, fatigued, tired, burnt out, all of those things, because there's the middle ground is probably where things need to be. And then also, you know, a lot of vets work on pattern recognition. They don't use evidence-based medicine. So I know as a new grad, when I came out, I was taught closed collection systems in cats. I was taught to use a soft urinary catheter. We were taught about all of those things. And I went into the real world, and my boss put those, you know, I don't even know, I haven't seen them in years. I don't know if you guys even have them anymore. Those super rigid plastic Tomcat catheters that you use to just unblock and then remove them when they're really stubborn. I would sew those into cats. Can you imagine the poor cats? Those rigid plastic things left it open. Like, and I was taught better than that, but then my boss said, oh, this is real world. So I was like, oh, well, then that's what you do. But then after I went to another clinic, I realized that he's 15 years outdated and real world is not real world. So it's new grads have this situation where they're trying to bring in the medicine they learn. They're trying to do best practice. They're trying to do evidence-based medicine. But then you're also getting, you know, either back pressure intentionally or not from your boss, and then trying to figure out where that middle ground is. And definitely with records, I think the best advice I can give you for that is have templates. So have things where you can call up your template and then you can put things in. For your physical exam, have normals preset so that when you go through, you can just do the abnormal. And actually on the website, I have a record template that you can just save as a, on the desktop, what's it called? A bookmark. So everywhere where I work, I have that saved as a bookmark so I can copy and paste it. Because you do, you have 5 minutes to write a record. You can't write the type of record you were taught in school in 5 minutes. You can't. It's not possible. No. So it's, learning that middle ground, and it's, everyone will make their own style, but I recommend having your own template so that you can go to, and then having a consistent plan and path that you follow. It's hard though. It definitely is hard when your regular, you know, your boss might write vomiting, metronidazole, Serenia, and that's it. And that's the whole record. Well, that's not appropriate either. So it's finding that middle ground.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's also, coming into a new clinic as a new grad, working with the team and working with the nurses as well. You might come from uni having been taught that best standard is doing full mouth x-rays on all your dentals, or that you're familiar using a particular anesthetic protocol. And when you come to your new clinic, you might find that some people aren't comfortable with that, or they have other opinions on that. And that can be tough to sort of make your voice heard, because they know you're a newbie. So, like, you have to, I guess, assert your dominance in one way as well.
It is. It's a big challenge. We were talking before about metoclopramide and when to use that and not. And it is very difficult, because your nurses, especially if they're experienced, are going to be incredibly valuable resources for you. But at the same time, like you said, they don't have that responsibility. Nurses don't have the education behind knowing all the possibilities. So if it's pattern recognition and it turns out, you know, 80% of the time they're going to be right, but if it's that 20% of the time that they're wrong and it's not following the typical pattern, that's on your shoulders. That's on your degree. And if you have a particularly stubborn or strong-willed nurse, sometimes it means you have to, you know, say, let's go for lunch and sit down and be like, hey, I know you're incredibly knowledgeable and I can't thank you enough for how amazing you've been and how you've supported me. But at the end of the day, some of these things are going to come on my license. And as medicine progresses, we're taught new things, and I know it's change and I know it's scary, but there's reasons that I'm asking you to do things differently. And I'm happy to answer why at any time. You know, if it's an emergency, please, I just ask that you do what I'm saying in that moment. but I'm always happy to chat about why afterwards. And, you know, as we were chatting with the metatonin, if there's a certain new drug or new protocol or new way of doing something that the nurses or the team isn't familiar with, offer to do a presentation, you know, show them, educate. The more you can show that you respect how valuable they are, respect how wonderful and knowledgeable they are, but also show, okay, I've got a brain on my shoulders, I'm not a complete idiot. It's helpful, but it's especially as a new grad coming out, sometimes it feels like a pissing contest, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a really, really hard dynamic to navigate, because you do want them, you do need them, you do need their support. It's not like you can just be like, screw you, shut up, because that's stupid too. So trying to talk to people and pull them aside and have those conversations of, hey, I'm doing it this way because of X, Y, and Z, and here are the studies, and here's the information, and I'm happy to go through anything. I've only had one situation where I haven't been able to navigate through that conversation with someone, that I've had to kind of then go to the boss and say, this isn't working. So most times you can, if you pull them aside and have that private conversation, it can help. But
One of my good friends is working at a clinic where they don't routinely use anesthetic sheets, monitoring sheets.
Okay.
And, you know, that is a big thing for obvious reasons. It is a legal requirement to have. But these things happen. And my friend has been trying really hard to try and convince the team and also the nurses to, at least when he's doing his own surgeries, he wants to have them monitor, you know, writing down all the parameters and all of that. And he's gotten, you know, some pushback for doing that. So been scheduled on with less surgery, you know, feels like nurses don't want to do his anesthetics as much. And that's, you know, that's really tough. And I feel like that's something that a lot of new grads, you know, that happens as well. But
I think that person needs to have a very strong conversation with their boss. My advice to that person would say, you need to schedule a meeting with your boss. You need to talk about how it's a requirement. It needs to be protocol set in place. There are some things that are minimum standard of care. It costs nothing to appropriately. If something goes wrong in that anesthetic, he's going to lose his license. And if that clinic is that resistant against doing something that is a legal basic requirement of the profession, then what else are they doing inappropriately? Like, these types of clinics, some clinics you just have to leave. If a boss is being that hesitant, I don't know. Like, how is the rest of the work? What's the standard of care? That's a hard situation.
Yeah. I'm not saying, like, everything else is the same, but there are just, you know, a few things. It's not just the one friend, it's other friends. Like, we're all facing our own sort of individual challenges at our new workplaces. If it's, mentoring and support is a really big thing. Some friends not getting enough support that they thought they were going to get. Feel like I've been very lucky where I am in terms of that. Having another support system with, like, people outside of your own clinic is really important. And what me and my friends have done, we try and have a group chat once a week, which we've had since we started working, and that's been really nice. Sometimes when you come home, you just don't want to talk about work at all or cases, but actually discussing some cases with other new grads has been really rewarding as well.
Yeah, that's awesome that you have that. It's no one can understand what you're going through better than someone going through it at the same time. Even people that went through it 5 years ago and they know those feelings, it's hard to put yourself back in that situation as much as someone going through it yourself. So having someone at that level, and in the blogs, I have the four mentors every vet needs, and one of them is that person, that peer mentor that's at the same stage. So the fact that you guys have that group is amazing, and I encourage more people to have that system, because then you can talk about, okay, well, my clinic's doing this and my clinic's doing that, and where can you push? And it is every clinic is going to have its shit. Every clinic is going to have its downsides, right? And it's determining which clinics are worth moving and progressing, and it's finding your voice as a new grad to be able to go to your boss and say, like, look, I'm a valuable resource as a new grad. I've got all this latest medicine. I've got all this information that I can bring to your clinic. I can bring your clinic into this day and age. I'm happy to do it. I'm excited. And hopefully having a boss that is, you know, supportive enough to listen and to take you on.
Yeah. Another thing that this is probably the last thing I have. It's just that something I didn't realize, but I was aware of, is just having the financial conversations with clients, that they can be very draining, very, very draining as a vet to have that.
Yeah.
And also having people sort of unload their personal problems and dilemmas and why they can't afford treatment and this and this, it can be sort of, you just, like, you want to be there to do your job and help their animals, and you're not always in the right mindset to, like, listen to their story. I don't know if you've seen those pictures where it's like, veterinarians are dermatologists, like, and there's all these specialists, cardiologists, endocrinologists, you know, all of that. But I feel like we're also, like, psychologists and, like, accountants sometimes.
Financial planners, personal assistants, like, I know. It is a very, very, very hard job. And especially because most of us that go into it are very empathetic, sympathetic people. And you have, you know, Miss Smith come in and she wants the best for Fluffy, but her husband just died and she's on a pension, and you know Fluffy needs this, but she can't afford it. It is heartbreaking. It is emotionally draining. It's exhausting. And it's something that every vet goes through, and it never goes away completely, unfortunately. It is part of the job. What I would recommend, and what I have done for myself to protect my own emotional component, is I've just said to myself, I forgive you for not being able to survive people's or fix people's problems. I forgive you for not being a specialist in every field. I forgive you for not being able to emotionally fix everyone. You are a veterinarian. You are there to provide options. I look at my role, and since I've done this, it's been much better. My role is to know what best practice is, to offer all of the different options, and to be flexible, understanding, and accommodating for people's situations. My job is not to discuss your alcohol problem. My job is not to fix your financial situation. It is not my fault that your husband died. It is not my fault that your house burned down in the fires. All I can do is offer you the options. Medicine costs money. I can't change that. I cannot change the fact that surgery uses drugs, uses anesthesia. I cannot change the fact that I need to make a living and I should be paid appropriately for my wage. And I'm okay with the fact that I should be paid for the work that I do. You know, we have this huge sense of guilt about taking a salary, because then animals are suffering because we're being paid. Like, that's bullshit, but we feel it. So just try to forgive yourself and know that you're not being selfish for wanting to be paid. It is not your job to determine other people's salaries and other people's financial situations and whatever. And all your job is to provide options to owners, let them know the costs, the understanding, and support them in whatever decision they make. as long as the animal is not suffering at the end of the day, that is the only job that you have. And all of that, you can't be all of those things to all of those people. You just can't. You can't be a specialist in every field. And it's a huge lesson that new grads have to learn, is that you're a veterinarian. You are not all of those other things, nor do you have to be. But it's hard. It's really, really hard. When I was a new grad, I had this lady. It was awful. She was lovely. She came in with her, like, two-year-old lab, nice as pie. He was having trouble pooping. I found an anal gland mass, and his sublimitor loads were already huge. Like, he had metastatic cancer super young. So she was on her third husband. Both of the first two had died from cancer. Her son and daughter-in-law had a baby who died. She committed suicide after the baby died. He killed himself after the situation. And her current husband was in end-stage kidney cancer failure. And now I'm telling her her dog has cancer. So every time she ended up getting an update about her husband, they knew on Thursdays we had a four-hour gap, so we had a late day. She knew I worked. She would book an appointment for the last morning appointment on Thursday. She would come in, I'd rectal the dog, be like, still got cancer. And we would sit and talk for 4 hours about her husband and his cancer. And, like, it's not okay. Like, it's not okay.
No.
But that was what I did as a new grad, because I felt, and then I ended up, like, babysitting her dog, and then, well, her husband was in hospital. It was just a nightmare. And it's, we put all these pressures on ourselves to be these things for these people. And you don't have to. And everyone will learn their own way to deal with it. And you'll learn your own way to have coping mechanisms. But just understand it's okay to not be those things to those people. And it is emotionally draining. It's a really, really hard job. And having the financial conversation over and over again every day, and being yelled at, told that you don't care, you're just in it for the money. Like, it's really difficult when all you care about is being there for the animal. So just, I put up a wall. I am here to provide you options. This is the cost of care, has been my life-saving phrase. That's what I say to people. Yeah. Oh, blah, blah, blah. How can you charge that much? And I just say, this is the cost of care. Would you like to pursue this, or do we want to talk about other options? And I just ignore their little temper tantrums. But it is, it's really, really difficult, and I don't think anything can ever prepare you for that coming
no.
out.
No. Because I'm thinking about, if there is room to improve veterinary education to a sense where we can prepare ourselves better for what we're actually going to face. And, like, I think some of it, maybe we can, to some extent. But some of it may just be a real world type experience. But, yeah.
We did a lot. In my school, we had these actors come in, and we would have these scenarios. I don't know if you guys had them in yours.
We had, like, consultations with actors, which was good.
Yeah. So we did that, and there was always, like, the underlying story. So, like, one guy had an overweight dog, and you're supposed to talk to him about being overweight, but then you find out that his son moved away, and he's actually depressed because his son moved away, so they're not walking the dog as much. I find that school tries to prepare you for those conversations, but it's always focused on, how can we help the human-animal bond? Like, it's almost like they're trying to prep us to be the psychologist, to be the advisor. And I don't feel like they ever say to us, or said to us in school, you know what? It's okay for you to say, I'm not going to talk to you about your alcohol problem. Literally, I had a guy when I was a new grad, and he would come in and talk to me about his alcohol abuse. And how he was an alcoholic, and, like, I should have just, like, yeah, he would ask me questions, like, and I was like, I am not, what if I say the wrong thing? What do you do? And at some point, you just have to be able to say, like, you know what, I'm really sorry, but I can't talk to you about this. This is your personal situation. It sounds like you're going through a hard time, and I think maybe that you should talk to your GP or a psychologist, but I'm not trained for this. And I don't think school teaches us that it's okay to not be as focused on the human-animal bond. They push so much, human-animal bond, you need to think about the person, you need to know where they're coming from, and you do, but at some point you need to have some level of self-preservation, and I agree, I don't think school really talks about that at all.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I agree. But, yeah, I mean, this whole feeling of guilt and feeling like you have to, like, you have to be emotionally available, and like, I sometimes, I think many vets can relate to this, but sometimes you feel guilty. Maybe not you, because you've developed a good system that sounds really good, but at least probably many new grads, sometimes you feel guilty even presenting an estimate, because you know it's like $2,000 for a surgery or hospitalization or something for their critical animal. And you feel guilty because you know it's a lot of money. But yeah, I'm trying to work on this. I'm trying to feel more comfortable. And, you know, it is what it is. I can't change it.
Yeah, it is. It's hard, especially when you know that they're strapped. But what I would say is you're not... You don't know what that animal is worth to that person. I have seen people that have incredibly limited finances take a dog where we've given them a 10% chance of success through an event, and they have remortgaged their houses to put them on a ventilator and to do that surgery, which we have advised against, but all we can do is offer options. But that 10% chance is worth it to them to try. And I've seen other people that drive up in a BMW with fake boobs and gold earrings, and their dog has something that's fixable for $500. And they're like, well, how much is euthanasia? And it's, you don't know how much an animal is worth to someone, and it is not your job to think about that. Your job is to offer options and be supportive in what they decide, and it is hard, and I think that we also think about how much money is if it were us. You know, especially as a new grad, you're thousands and thousands of dollars in debt, you have a pitiful salary, you know, $2,000, once in 5 years from now, $2,000 is going to look very differently to you than it does right now, and those people are in different situations, and you're right, you can't control how much medicine costs. You should be paid. Your nurses should be paid. Your boss should have a functional practice, and their fees are set so that everything occurs in the way that they want. And, you know, it's not your job at all to set the fees. Your job is to charge appropriately for what you're doing and provide options. And it takes time to do that, and it takes time to become okay with that. But knowing... You know, I hope that knowing that everybody's gone through that process and knowing that it is okay, you just have to figure out how to emotionally get over that is important. But it is it's a huge part of our job, and just knowing that it's okay to charge for your services.
Is
important. It's it's very, very challenging as a new grad. But don't preconceive that something is expensive, I guess, would be my biggest thing. You don't know where that person's coming from. You don't know what their financial situation is. Give them an opportunity to say, I can't afford that. So I never like to try to bully people or give them the impression that I'm forcing them into doing something. If I'm giving them an estimate, I say, this is the estimate, this is what I recommend. Is this something that you would like to and are able to pursue? And I think by adding that "and are able," you open the door of the conversation for them to say, you know what, financially, this is just not possible. And then you can say, okay, cool, great, let's reevaluate. Let's make the next best plan that works for everyone. And taking away that level of pushing onto the client by focusing more on how can I make sure that I'm being supportive in whatever decision they make. If you change what you're focusing on, it might help. Because then you're not focused on, oh my God, this is a big estimate. You're focusing on, okay, how do I deliver this in a way that is open for them to let me know if it's not okay? So then you're changing the focus. I don't know if that'll help.
Yeah. No, that sounds that sounds like a great advice. Absolutely, it is something I do feel like I'm getting better at every day. So I mean, there have been some, I guess, difficult topics that we've talked about. They're not easy, and I suppose one thing that I've spoken to my friends about as well is sort of thinking about cases, even on your days off, or waking up first thing in the morning, thinking about a sick dog that you're just hoping that it survived the night or something like that. I mean, that's straining too, but I don't know what to say. I don't want to make it too depressing because there are so many good things about this profession as well. Like, I'm really happy being a vet. Mm-hmm. It is really tough, but it's also very, very rewarding. And I'm really happy overall.
Good. Yeah. It's such an amazing profession. There's so much opportunity. You're always growing. You're always learning. And it is wonderful, but there's room to improve. And I think that's kind of where the focus is, you know, yes, we've got these great aspects. Let's make it amazing. Because right now, the negative aspects for a lot of people are outweighing the positive ones. And in terms of thinking about your cases on your day off and that sort of thing, I still do it, you know, and you get better and you improve. I would say as a new grad, you're so focused on this. You've been studying nonstop for 6 years. I think whether you do an internship or not, every new grad should consider their first year out like an internship, because that's going to let them be able to kind of jump into those cases and think about it and dive in and get that experience hands-on. So that's what I tried to do every single, you know, every day when I went home, I read up about cases. And yes, try to take some time off, but just coming out of school, that's going to be hard. So don't beat yourself up when you can't do it. You know, try to go for hikes, try to go for walks, try to get outside and do things that are getting you away from the profession. Try to have conversations that aren't vet related, but don't beat yourself up if you can't. You know, I still struggle with that. And I think a lot of us, because we are so focused on our career and we really want to be the best possible vet that we can and we want to provide the best care we can for the animals, don't feel bad if you aren't just magically perfect at work-life balance. Work-life balance is a skill. It's something you work on just as much as you work on being better at surgery. It's skill, something that you practice. So yeah, don't feel bad that you wake up and think, oh my God, how did that animal do? Every surgery, I'm like checking the records to see how they do. It just means that you care. It means that you're not jaded. When you stop caring how they did after surgery, that's a concern. And you'll learn to only check it when you go in at work. Not having your work email sent to your house is a good one. Turning your phone off at night is a good one. But it's okay that you're feeling that way. It's really quite That's common. Good.
Yeah.
So do you have, you know, three general pieces of advice that you wish you could tell yourself from 6 months ago before we run away?
I'll see. First one is just, I think on the same topic, it's just when you have days off, try and enjoy other things that's not vet related, because I do actually find it helps a lot and it makes coming back to work so much more enjoyable if you've done something on your day off. Second thing would be try and learn as much as you can from everyone in your clinic, both nurses and vets. At my clinic we have one vet that he's an older vet, so I think he's worked for about 25-30 years. Even though he does some things differently to some of the other vets, it's really interesting and engaging in that conversation, asking each other why we do it the way we do.
That's awesome.
You find that you can learn a lot from that interaction. Final thing, I don't know, I'd say try and get your record keeping, try and have that down pat if you can. I tried a template early on, and I find that works for me as well. So
good.
Templates are great. I don't know.
And even if you have like templates for surgeries, templates for certain protocols that you're doing more commonly, discharge instructions are great so that you're not doing those continually. So, you know, if you have a chocolate toxicity come in or a surgery or, you know, diabetes, finding those draft, you know, those discharge instructions. And there's some online too that you can find and then modify so that you're not redoing work all the time. Being more efficient is going to be helpful in the high-paced situation.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. If I could add one more thing that I wish I could tell you just based on this conversation is forgive yourself. You know, forgive yourself for not being able to be everything. Forgive yourself for not being a specialist in every field. That was a lesson I had to learn early on, and it's a hard one to learn, but once you realize you're only one person, like, you can't be all of the specialists. You can do your very best, and as long as you care and are doing your very best, you're doing a great job, and you don't have to be all of those other things to all of those other people. So forgive yourself for not being those people. Forgive yourself for feeling anger or annoyance at those people, because then we're like, oh, this stupid person's making me feel bad, and then you're mad at them, and then you feel guilty for being mad at them. And now I'm at the stage where I don't feel sad during euthanasias because I have learned to build such a wall. So if I let that wall come down a little bit, I will fall apart with euthanasias. So I have a wall. So sometimes when I'm doing them, I'm pretending to be upset to the people so they don't think I'm cold-hearted, and then I have this weird, like, I'm a jerk because I don't feel bad, but I do feel bad because I built this wall. It's like, you know, just forgive yourself for all of that. You're just a human. You're going to have emotions, and it's okay that you don't want to take on the world's sadness every single day at work. It's okay to build a wall. It's okay to self-preserve. So that would be the biggest thing that I would say to you from this conversation, because, you know, you're doing your best. You can only be one person. You can't be all of those people. Anyways, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it. And I know the other new grads that see this are going to get immense value out of it. So thank you so much. And thank you everyone for joining us and staying with us till the end. And as always, advocate for yourself, because you are the only one that will.
Thanks, guys. Okay. Great.